Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. This program is an invitation to join myself, Magla Pillay, and Sister Denise, who has been a Raj Yoga teacher with the Brahma Kumaris for several decades. The format of the show is Socratic Dialogue. This is a philosophical method of systematic doubt and questioning to elicit a clear expression of a truth deemed to be knowable by all rational beings. We will take up a wide variety of subjects related to moral and ethical values. We will question the world's conventional views on these matters. We will analyze and dialogue the topics to gain greater insight and perhaps uncover new foundations to formulate our value systems. Everyone is concerned about doing the right thing. Paradoxically, most people act against their own conscience. We will investigate why this is so. To that end, I wish to welcome Sister Denise in our studio today. Sister Denise, very warm welcome and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to today's talk especially because it's a continuation of an episode that you and I did together some time ago. We spoke of the human conscience, but today taking on something that you said in the past, I would like to entitle today's talk, The Activated Human Conscience. So, does that mean that the conscience of most people on earth is dormant?
Dormant, you could say, or it's not working well. It's not reliable. They can't really rely on it, so they have to seek assistance from other people, and the problem with doing that is the other people will give them a piece of advice which is convenient for them but not necessarily in your best interest. So the best thing I feel is to really do the work that is required to reset and activate and enable the conscience to be refined, sharp, clear, acute and sensitive to right and wrong so that it can guide you, its owner, very well.
Mm. How does the activated conscience relate to one of the spiritual laws that you mentioned on a previous show, specifically the law of karma?
When you do an action which is against your conscience, then you are violating the law of karma. And when you violate the law of karma, you will pay. And the way you pay is your conscience ceases to be effective. Now that puts you in a very vulnerable position because you then are operating without proper inner guidance. And so you may make rash actions, rash decisions, and you're not adequately operational from the inside to be able to calculate the consequences of your actions.
Mm, I see. So, Sister Denise, the law of karma is universally understood. And okay,
no.
Okay. Let me rephrase that question. Understanding that's shared in the Bible, for example, is as you sow, so shall you reap. So there. My question is that there are many across the globe who understand the law that which you do, you will get the return of it. Okay? Question is, how is it that so many people understand or have an awareness of it, ignore it? That is my question.
The reason they ignore it because they don't understand it. You see, you say to a person, as you sow, so shall you reap. They don't get it because you have to give a whole lot more explanation.
Okay, so what you're saying is although people say the words, they still do not understand it. And although people who, for example, grow up in a Hindu culture, know of the law of karma, they know the words, but they say the words, but they still don't understand it. Is that what you think?
Yes. Yes.
So they say it, but they don't understand it.
Yes.
And because they don't understand it, they don't operate by its principles.
Or they understand it in a way that is incorrect. So they think they have understood it, but they haven't.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, sometimes people will say, you know, people will say, if you do this, God will be angry with you.
Mm-hmm.
If you do this, you will take a rebirth as a mouse. This is completely untrue. And so the law of karma is known to the extent that there are consequences of what you do, but it's been used to threaten people, to manipulate people, and so it has been misrepresented quite substantially. And I believe that people get away with misrepresenting it because there is very little clarity. The laws of karma are very complex, very deep, very subtle. So it requires a lot of thought, a lot of study, a lot of experimentation and experience to be skilled in the use of and the articulation of the laws of karma so that they are very clear and that people can understand them.
Then what, Sister Denise, is a sign that one understands the laws of spirituality, the law of karma, and the proper functioning of the human conscience? What is the sign?
The best analogy is if a person understands the laws of physics, they can send rockets to the moon, or they can make cameras that go through people's arteries and find out where the blockages are. They know the subject, and the proof of knowing the subject is the technology. So in the same way, if you really know the laws of karma, you can describe it in detail and you can show exactly how it works, and it can be seen to work that way every time. And it is very subtle and very refined, so that a person who really knows the laws of karma well, they will make their life absolutely successful on every level. That's the proof.
That's quite a surprise, because the expression law of karma has been around for ages. So what you're saying is people use the words, but they do not understand it. And because they do not understand it, they don't live it.
And they misrepresent it. And
okay.
So they use
it to themselves and to others?
Well, they also use it as an instrument to cause damage, whereas it's supposed to be to help you to do the right thing in such a way that you and everybody else has a good life. Good life means happiness in terms of your physical health, your relationships, and the wealth and the environment, everything.
If somebody has an activated conscience, and by that I mean somebody who sets high standards for themselves and lives by them, or does their best to live by them, what will be the proof of that in that person's psyche, in his life, in his relationships? What will be the difference?
Well, the difference is they won't have any surprises. They will calculate each and everything, and the calculations will check out. They will be able to keep themselves in good health. They will be able to make sure that all of their relationships are in order all the time, and that everything around them really works well, smoothly, harmoniously.
Sister Denise, you said just now that there are no surprises, but we all have old debts. How does that expression go? Old sins have long shadows.
Yes.
So we all have old debts. There are surprises, aren't they?
Well, they're a surprise to those who are insensitive. But a person who really works with the laws of karma and knows them, they're able to detect an unexpected thing coming from a distance, so that it effectively is not a surprise.
Okay, so you have, working with the law of karma give you foresight?
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. Didn't realize that one before.
Yes, yes.
So,
and it also helps you to really understand yourself. You understand your Achilles heel, you understand your dark side, you understand your potential, you understand your impact, the laws of karma are like trends. And so you can see the future because you understand the trends. You can understand what's happening in the present because you can see backwards also.
Mm.
You see, that makes it so knowable.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you this question again, but in the context of the human conscience. When it's time to pay an old debt, how does somebody with an activated conscience pay an old debt if it's a heavy debt? Because we're living in a world where we see people paying off some very heavy debts.
Yes. A person who is very spiritually sensitive, you can appreciate that they would have been that way for a long, long time. So while they may have some heavy debts to pay, they might not be quite as heavy as someone who hasn't been attentive to the quality of their action. So some debt which may be unbearably heavy to a person who has never paid attention, that's a different question. But to the person who's spiritually sensitive and who's really focused on the quality of their action, you see, whatever has happened in the past, even the very ancient past, it leaves traces which we call sanskaras in the terminology of Raja Yoga. These sanskaras, they are present in the form of tendencies. So whatever are the negative things...
Is another word for tendencies habits? Or is the habits and tendencies two different things?
I would put them differently.
Okay, so you repeat your sentence. I interrupted you.
The sanskaras will be present as a tendency.
Uh-huh.
So you're in a situation which triggers those tendencies. And if you're very aware of yourself, you will see the trigger, you will see the tendency that it's triggering, and you will have the option to decide whether or not to block it.
Mm-hmm.
So when the tendency is activated by the trigger, that is its own force. But the force of you, this soul who is very aware, can intercept that force with your own force, which we call willpower, and say no. You see? And then that tendency begins to wither.
Does that not give rise to internal conflict?
You could say internal conflict because there's a force of a tendency that wants to carry on going, and there's the force of the activated will that says, no, we don't go there anymore. So these two will have to neutralize each other, or the will has to neutralize the force, so it has to be more powerful. These are your spiritual weapons, you can say.
Okay, so did he say if you're made a decision to you've now chosen to live a life of somebody with an activated conscience, and you've chosen not to give in to your anger, okay, and or lust or whatever weakness that you've chosen to take head on, and this doesn't come in the form of a thought, these tendencies, it comes in the form of feelings.
Yes.
And it comes, it's a matter of milliseconds between the trigger and the feeling. Now, all of this is the tsunami is unfolding inside of you.
Yes.
Okay? Tell us, what does one do then? Feeling is mm-hmm. calling you mm-hmm. to act.
Yes.
And it's...
You have your tsunami.
Yes.
And the tsunami is traveling at a rate.
Yes.
And we speak of something, Tivra Purusharat. Tivra Purusharth is a Hindi expression for very fast action for the sake of the self.
Very fast action for the sake of the self. Okay.
You intercept that tsunami and it melts in front of your thought and dissipates. And it may dissipate in a way that feels like poison moving through your whole body. You have to be able to expand yourself to hold it without reacting to it. This is called the power of tolerance.
My goodness. That's an enormous amount of power that's needed.
That is spiritual power. And when you decide that you want to give attention to your spirituality, over time you slowly build this up, and it keeps on building up for as long as you live. And every so often, this energy of negativity will come in the form of a major tsunami, and you have to be able to stop it from doing damage, and you also have to handle the residual spread of this energy, which turns itself in a sense against you. So you have to endure it until it is neutralized and dissipated. And this is how you finish off your sin, with the power of yoga.
The power that you spoke of that is needed to do that, one, it's not human power, it's divine power.
Well, when you're doing yoga, you are turning your attention to yourself as a spiritual being, and you're focusing your mind on the being of God, the Supreme Soul, and you're drawing light into yourself, which is an energy. And that energy amplifies your own power, because otherwise you're powerless in the face of your own sin. But once you are empowered, then you have that divine power, and you have the power of negativity, and you need to make sure that your power is stronger than it, so that you can melt it. Mm. And when, you know, if you look at it in military terms, if you have a missile which is intercepted by another missile, it blows up in midair and lots of stuff falls down. So the stuff falls down, you have to be able to handle that until it sort of melts away. So that requires that tolerance, because there's pain involved. But by doing that, you don't suffer. If you don't do that, you will suffer.
Does that mean one is to be stronger than one's weaknesses?
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Okay. Which begs the next question, how do you become stronger than your weaknesses when your weaknesses are part of who you are?
Look at again the idea, a soul is a like a ball, like we have this ball here. So imagine this ball is full of purity, peace, power, love and bliss. It's powerful. As you use your qualities of purity, peace, power, love and bliss, the space in the ball becomes empty, and that emptiness is filled with negativity, which takes over where the pure qualities are used up and diminished, you see. So your weakness is that empty space filled with negativity. Now, as you start to have yoga and you become more strong, then that negativity has less space to occupy, so it becomes compressed, and so it reacts. But you make it disappear, make it melt, by applying that light to that darkness. You see, in the studio where we are, we have lights. Now, if there's a power cut, those lights go off, and you have darkness. But darkness is only there when light is not there. Now, darkness isn't a thing, whereas light is a thing.
Is that what is meant by the third eye?
Well, the third eye is your ability to conceptualize understand and perceive non-physical realities.
Oh, please say that again.
Your third eye is your ability to see, conceptualize, and perceive non-physical realities.
Okay.
Your two eyes will show you everyday reality.
Mm.
Your five senses are very good for the everyday world. You can't see X-rays, gamma rays. Once you get out of everyday reality, then you need technical scientific instruments to perceive those things. But once you go beyond the physical universe into the world of the spirit, where your scientific instruments cannot go, your third eye can see. So the soul, the being of God, after death, before life, all of these things that are outside the range of physical perception, including the physical senses aided by technology, for that you need the third eye. So the third eye is an instrument of perception where you can perceive non-physical realities.
Sure. That's quite something. So, in order to have an activated human conscience, you are saying that somebody needs to understand the law of karma, somebody needs to actively keep their third eye opened, and somebody has to be fairly introspective in order to live life by the spiritual laws.
But I think it's very important, especially for the people who are listening to our discussion today, who may say, oh, well, that's out of my range, you know. You start with very small steps, and every time you take a step, however small, you're building something. Like you were mentioning earlier about your conscience is rebuilt brick by brick. We have to do these things little bit at a time. We build the conscience brick by brick. We cultivate the garden of our virtues, flower by flower, blade of grass by blade of grass, leaf by leaf. It's an ongoing, lifelong process, and it's really worthwhile. So our attention, as people motivated by the spiritual part as opposed to the materialistic part, is that you're not trying to, you know, achieve something physical. You're trying to achieve something that is about what you are, who you are as a being, rather than what you want to show as a mask to the people. Do you see what I'm saying?
Hmm.
And when you do this, all of the achievements that you build, it stays with you because you're building your soul. And at the end of your life, well, you carry that with you. Otherwise, whatever you do from the perspective of materialism, at the end of your life, you leave it behind. You start again from scratch. And very often, if you've had a life where you haven't paid attention to your karma, you've accumulated a lot of debts, then you start to have to pay those debts in your next life, and you may not get such a good life. Whereas if you pay a lot of attention on the quality of your being, the quality of your actions, your relationships, that will take you into a very good life, which is a really that you are evolving, you are progressing. When you're not paying attention to your karma, well, you're declining, and your circumstances in your subsequent life will reflect that.
Hmm. So, Denise, we spoke about one's good and bad traits earlier. Do you consider both of those to be at either end of the same spectrum, or are they two totally different traits? For example, if somebody wants to become serene,
and they find themselves with the polar opposite in terms of their personality. But they admire serenity in others, they admire gentleness in others, but they themselves are not either of these things. So do you have to move, or do you have to recreate, or do you have to emerge, and how does an activated conscience play a part in becoming a better you?
Well, you can go about it virtue by virtue, quality by quality, but I find that not a very good way to go. Rather, I think it's good to introspect and try to feel the harmony, the vibration of your spirit, because what that will do is activate your natural virtues. And as much as you take in light through your meditation on the Supreme Being, that will water your virtues and give sunshine to your virtues, and they will start to arise very naturally. And I find that this actually is more organic, more natural, more in correspondence with the reality of who you are, which you're kind of discovering, because all of these flowers were seeds, and sometimes you don't know what's in your box of seeds until they start growing. And the negative traits would be more like your weeds, and so they will grow and you'll pull them out so that the beautiful flowers will grow and you cultivate them. But if you just sort of go to a catalogue of virtues and so on, you may make something rather like painting by numbers, which is not so beautiful really in the end.
Okay. Sister Denise, unfortunately we've come to the end of today's show, and as you can see, ladies and gentlemen, this topic is as brilliant in its depth and wisdom by Sister Denise as was part one of The Human Conscience. I hope you have taken as much benefit from this subject as I have. As you can see, the human conscience is a vast and undiscovered territory, because it is the part of the essence of who you are. What Sister Denise has shared today is that it's worth looking at, it's worth cleaning out, you're worth the effort. I think that is the main message that I got from Sister Denise today, that every ounce of pure and positive energy that you invest in your own conscience will bear fruit, because you are worth it. And I think the question that I'm left with at the end of this talk is how much energy are you willing to invest in yourself? So Sister Denise, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this fascinating subject of the human conscience. I hope that when you finish listening to today's program, you ask yourself the question as to what is the condition of my conscience. Thank you and goodbye.